For six, it's more about like I committed to being part of this institution, this like the Try Guys or this family. And so I begin to deny, and it's not even like, it's just like urges and signals and just anything that
happens when you don't feel great about those things anymore.
Right. And so it's not about doing it for the, for lovability, like type two, the helper. It's doing it for the sake of feeling part of and duty bound to this broader commitment or structure that you're participating in. So no matter what type you are, one of the types adjacent to you, you will also have undertones of. Sober is about being with what
measured, and
okay with what is. I listened to your podcast with your ex-wife when you launched. And for me, there was a lot of language in there that was about acknowledging betrayal of trust. I'm really struck by your honesty and authenticity as you've come out of what you experienced.
Hello and welcome back to the Rock Bottom Podcast. I'm Ned Fulmer and my guest today is Courtney Smith. She is a Fortune 500 consultant and celebrity coach in this ancient personality test called the Enneagram. Maybe you've heard of it? What's your number? What's your type? Well, we'll get into it all today. And it's going to be less about Courtney's any specific rock bottom that she has had or that she's overcome, and more how you can use this idea of the Enneagram, personality types, what it says about you, and how it might help you overcome a challenge in your own life. So very excited to get into it. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So the Enneagram, what is it?
Okay, so maybe lots of people have seen the Enneagram. They've taken a test.
You got the numbers.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
I'm a one, but I'm a kind of a seven on the certain, you know,
exactly.
Mood strikes me.
Exactly, and it can be conflated with horoscope and, you know, all kinds of different
Myers-Briggs
things.
Myers-Briggs also.
Exactly. And so I guess what I would want to say about the Enneagram is start out by saying that the system thinks about personality as a set of traits and ways of being in the world that you have adapted to get your needs met. That's the first thing that's my first premise.
Okay.
Is that's what
a system of traits that you have adapted to get your needs met.
And not just traits, but also like ways of seeing the world.
Right.
So are you fundamentally pessimistic or optimistic? Are you trusting or suspicious of people? That's not just a trait. That's a, like an orientation.
Yeah, your point of view.
Exactly.
So everyone, Courtney sent me a 144 question test that I completed.
That you loved to take.
I did kind of like it. Yeah. You know, there was so many questions that really, I stopped thinking about it. I was just like, click, click, click.
Yeah. So we can get into like what are the pros and cons of those tests. But I'm going to start out. That's what personality is, a set of traits and ways of being in the world and ways of seeing the world that you evolved to get your needs met. All human beings do this. I kind of call it our fundamental survival strategy because it's super plastic. It like really is, can be situationally specific to what's going on in your family, what community you're part of, what country you're part of, what time in life you find yourself in. It is the way you survive. We all need a personality to get here today.
And for children, it starts quite young. I mean, you can see little kids' preferences. I don't know if you can see their Enneagram type or their Myers-Briggs quadrant, but
right. And if you have more than one child, right, you think you're parenting the same way. You say no, or you set a limit, or whatever it is, and you have different children who respond very differently. And that's about what the Enneagram, where the roots of the Enneagram would start, which is these children come into this world already with a set of lenses as to how they're going to make sense of experiences they come across.
So let's back up even more. If someone is listening to this and has no idea what the Enneagram is, like, what is it? There's nine numbers.
Okay.
Each of them are different.
All right. So personalities, the traits and ways of seeing the world that help you get your needs met. The rub of the personality is that then it becomes like you're a hammer looking for a nail. It becomes a habitual way of being. It becomes conflated with your identity, so you get locked into it because it's who you think you are. And it has its own reality to it, where you start to show up in the world a certain way. And so then there's selection bias and lenses and, you know, like filtration systems that now you're making sense of the world through that lens. And so it becomes its own kind of locked in way of being. So personality starts out as adaptive, but eventually begins creating costs because it gets misused and overused. And so the Enneagram then is a system that starts out with, at its highest, most simple level, 9 different types of patterns or ways of being. And the objective of working with the Enneagram is to get a shorthand for what those adaptive strategies and patterns are, so that you can see the ways you're showing up in the world automatically, so that then you can become more intentional about, hey, this is a good idea in these circumstances, but in these other ways, it doesn't serve me. How can I see that, identify it, and work with it, and actually flex and move beyond my kind of limited range of being and making sense of the world?
Interesting. So this is both a way that you can relate to other people as well as a way of like bettering yourself, becoming the most self-actualized version of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that's to me one of the powers of the system, is that it has growth built into it. The idea that to survive as a human being, we end up costing ourselves in the long run. And so what do we do about that?
Yeah.
And it's a system, and that's why it has such ancient kind of roots and origins, that helps human beings deal with that fundamental human condition.
And so in doing the pre-production for this episode, you and I were talking about how there isn't necessarily a gigantic, big, challenging moment in your life that we wanted to talk about, but maybe we could talk about how each of these various 9 personality types might handle really tough situations, whether they're self-inflicted or happening to them, a rock bottom, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And what I would say about that is, you know, there's some objective circumstances that all of us would, you know, describe as a crisis or an inflection point. You know, the death of a loved one, a divorce, maybe a loss of a job, some sort of public canceling.
Yeah, or maybe all 3.
All at once. And so what distinguishes each of the types is, in what way is this a crisis for me? What is it asking me to confront and look at? And the answer is not going to be the same for each of the types. They're going to make meaning of this objective set of facts very differently. And the way you make meaning of it is both going to be the suffering it causes you, but also the opportunity for you to move and grow beyond the behaviors that helped you wind up in the circumstances you found yourself.
That's really fascinating. So it's very therapeutic in a way, where it's not just about the specific like practicality of whatever's going on in your life, but how you individually are responding to it, and how by either changing your thinking or by adjusting your approach, you can like have a much more positive frame of mind.
Yeah. I mean, I love the system. I love the Enneagram, and I love that it's popular and there's these tests everywhere, because it's fun to talk about at a cocktail party and talk about celebrities and why do I think they're this type. And so there's this like fun parlor trick game to it. And at the same time, the system is designed to help people, and rock bottom opportunities or challenges are, at the end of the day, opportunities for growth if you take them that way.
Right. So should we walk through what each of the 9 types are? What do you think?
Yeah, you want to?
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I do want to say, like, when I was thinking about this, what makes a rock bottom? And because your rock bottom is not my rock bottom necessarily, right? And so one of the things that I'm going to set up with each of the types is part of the lens of each, like type 1 is the reformer, type 2 is the helper, type 3 is the achiever. We'll go through each of them. But there's a specific human need that matters the most to each one of those Enneagram types. We can all see a little of ourselves and all of them, but at the end of the day, what starts that adaptive set of strategies is, what is the thing that I care the most about in this world? And so that becomes the lens through which I experience rock bottoms. Mm. It's when that need or value of mine is put at risk.
So what's a question someone listening right now should be asking themselves?
The question I would say is the circumstances that I'm experiencing, what payoff am I getting and in what way am I suffering? Mm. And which side is greater? Because rock bottom is about the ways I've been showing up in the world. I'm not stupid. I'm doing it for a reason. There's payoff to it. But rock bottom is when the scales tip and I see all of a sudden that there's been some huge costs mm-hmm. that I've been hiding from or disassociating from or not paying attention to. And all of a sudden, they become very big and loom large in my eyes and the scales tip. And then that's when I become motivated to break out of my box and do some self-examination and pay attention to what's really going on. So
it sounds like you believe that a really big crisis like that can be ultimately a catalyst for change to be like an even more better or evolved or conscientious version of yourself.
Yes, I would sort of say that what makes something a rock bottom is not only when you see the ledger tip of this is costing me more than I'm gaining, but also I'm willing to take responsibility for how I got there. Mm-hmm. Because when we hit rock bottom, it's very tempting, and each type can do this in fun, different ways, mm-hmm. to justify, defend, rationalize, make excuses, contextualize, deny.
Right. I think by definition, your lowest point is the time when you are not able to do that anymore.
Right. And so it's like, wait a second, all of that may be true. And at the end of the day, if I want to move forward, I have to see the role I played in
right.
this.
It's really and so like it's that accepting
yes.
of the consequences.
I yeah. created this situation. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then I got to take responsibility for it. And that's what promotes and causes someone to start walking down the path of change.
Yeah. Wow. Powerful stuff. Okay.
Okay. Start with
number
the numbers.
Number one.
Okay. Type one is called the reformer.
The reformer,
okay. Which is also, I guess, like a piece of Pilates equipment. The reformer. And the reformer is oriented around a feeling of profound integrity in the body. Like when you are, I don't know if you like the reformer or Pilates or yoga, when there's a feeling of like alignment in your body around the midline.
Huh.
And you feel like you stand a little taller. You feel this sense of dignity and grace, and there's a sensation of profound wholeness, which is another word for integrity. Like they have the etymology is the same. Hmm. And I feel good, like a good person. Keep going.
I think so. I don't know. It sounded like someone knocking on a pipe.
Okay.
I think it's fine. Okay. So you're... Okay, so the reformer, you're
yeah.
saying that it actually connects to this idea of like having a very aligned sense of self.
And having a feeling that whether I'm religious or not, I am in some way connected to the divine or a platonic ideal, something higher than myself.
Oh.
And
that guides all of their choices?
And it guides all my
whole
way of being.
I say they because I
yeah, my whole
don't
way
know
of
that
being,
it's me.
How I dress, who I choose as a partner, the things I put my attention on. I'm looking to be almost like a conduit or expression of the divine, or in a secular way, it would be like a platonic ideal mm. of goodness on this planet.
Mm. Could it manifest as someone being very politically active or someone
yeah.
being very philanthropically active?
Yeah, so you get a lot of different, I mean, this it gets more complex the more you study the system, but at a high level, you can get folks like Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Bernie Sanders, but then also equally combative, strident people on the right, George Will, Hillary Clinton, You can also get people who are thinking about that platonic ideal in an artistic sense. So like Meryl Streep is thought to be a type one. Alice Waters, the chef, who is using food to express a philosophy or a set of values on what it means to eat.
It's like someone's self is subsumed in favor of the other.
And this idea that what I eat is an expression of my values.
Right.
It's not just eating. I'm communicating something about what matters to me. And there's a right and a wrong way of consuming and preparing food. The right way makes you feel like a good human. The wrong way will lead you astray, will lead to you feeling corrupt, etc.
Interesting. You know, I was going to have us run through all nine and then go back to how they might experience like a rock bottom, but I feel like we should just
talk about each one.
Now I'm thinking about this reformer person. I want to know.
Yeah.
So what would happen to a reformer experiencing like the biggest challenge in their life?
Yeah. So this type is principled, conscientious, organized, punctual. They feel a strong sense of responsibility to perfect themselves and the world. And that quest for perfectionism leads over time to someone who becomes highly judgmental of themselves and others, rigid, self-righteous, unpleasant to be around. They're leaking anger and impatience and in frustration with every way that you're doing something wrong and every way that they're doing something wrong. So their rock bottom looks like a couple of different ways. The first is there's such self-control over being perfect, yet at the same time, they're a human being like the rest of us. So they have to deal with their own instinctual libidinal energy, impulses, desires, just like the rest of us do. And that can end up leaking into bad behavior that's kind of kept private or secret. And then all of a sudden, it can get exposed. And you have this tremendous hypocrisy between a person who's been publicly claiming moral high ground while secretly in violation of that. So like Eliot Spitzer, who I don't know if you know, was governor of New York and dating prostitutes. That's an example of a type one rock bottom. The other rock bottom for a type one would be they become so angry and so judgmental that they begin pushing others away. And they begin kind of expelling people from their lives because they, you know, they're not willing to be as perfect as I am. And so over time, type one then becomes increasingly alone and increasingly angry and bitter and begins to realize that their fixation on judgment has actually taken them away from that which they care the most about, which is being a good person. And so there's a realization that this thing I care about, the means by which I've been going about trying to feel that in my body have actually backfired. And I need to face the ways in which I'm just like everyone else, a flawed human being.
Wow. So what's number two?
I feel like this is like a roundup of disasters.
I know. I think each one we should also touch a little bit about how they can get out of it, but I also want to be conscious that we have half an hour to get through eight of them.
Okay, let's go. Type two is called the helper. Type two, their strongest value, the thing they care about the most, is what we sort of think of as love, kind of warm, gooey connection and emotional attunement with those they care the most about. And so type two goes about the world being incredibly generous and warm and focused on other people's needs with the hope of then feeling like kind of like in a love bubble with the people that they care about. And so this is beautiful, and there's so much generosity. Mother Teresa is a two. I mean, so many beautiful, very generous people in this world. That's the high side of this type. Where it becomes like shifts into rock bottom territory is this type is so focused on being selfless that they really begin to deny their own needs. And when they start to deny their own needs, a couple things happen. The first is, and this would be one form of rock bottom, they really begin to deplete themselves in a way that, like, something then happens where they're forced to be selfish in a way that they wouldn't otherwise be. And so they have a health crisis or something like that, where it's like, I can't take care of others anymore. I have to take care of myself now.
Oh, interesting.
And that would be the opportunity for this type to confront that if they don't take care of their own needs, harm falls upon them.
And for them, it's a huge crisis.
Exactly. Another example of rock bottom for this type would be sort of the stereotypical, like, empty nesters, where there's a mother or a parent who their whole life is defined as an identity that's giving and it needs to be needed. And then now life circumstances change where that's no longer being asked of him or her. And there's a crisis of identity of who am I when I can't take care of others. And so that's a smaller example of, like, it doesn't have, like, the bells and whistles of a, you know, huge public bottoming out. But for that type, that moment in time can be very confronting.
Interesting. So how does a two get out of it?
So this is about beginning to realize that what I want most of all, which is to feel love, I feel that by actually taking care of myself first. And the more I take care of myself, the more love is, not about, like, codependency or scratching each other. Like, I need my needs to be taken care of. You, like, you'll take care of my needs, I'll take care of your needs. It doesn't have that codependency cycle. It has, like, I'm actually okay, I'm taking care of myself. And so now when I come into relationship with you, it's not to get my needs met. It's to see, like, what happens, what kind of connection is available to us. And that's what I would argue is real love, when it's not based on transactional need.
Yeah.
So that's the opportunity.
Interesting. So the two eliminates their codependency, kind of self-parents, and then becomes able to give the love first to themselves and then still be giving love to other people, but not from a...
The downside of this type is there's like an implied reciprocity, right? Like, I'll take care of you and then hopefully you'll take care of me, because I can't straightforwardly own that I have needs as well. And so that's one of the other rock bottoms for this type, is there's kind of, at its low levels, it can be manipulative and have, like, kind of a implied reciprocity that doesn't feel good to the person on the receiving end of it. And so the other rock bottom for this type is to realize that giving in order to get, even though it's unconscious, is pushing people away. And the love that I'm looking for, in my inability to be, have humility and have my own needs, I'm not, it's backfiring.
All right. So let's move on to number three.
All right. Type three, the achiever. This one has a lot of public examples. We kind of like to see, we have a public fascination with type three achievers. Achievers, part of that is because there are an overrepresentation of achievers in celebrity status, because achievers are best in class. And the idea here is the achiever wants to feel valuable.
Are all Olympians achievers?
No.
Whoa.
We'll get to it. But, like, in fact, like, I was thinking about some of the other types. But it is true that those that are best in class in whatever field they do, that is an achiever. So Taylor Swift, Bill Clinton, Michael Jordan, lots of threes in this world. And what's happening
Michael
there...
Michael Jordan feels like the epitome of a three.
He had a rock bottom. He had a rock bottom when his father died. And we can talk about that. Like, The Last Dance is an amazing documentary that's like a masterclass about the type three arc. Because type three, the achiever, wants to feel valuable. And, like, a fundamentally, I'm a worthwhile human being. And so they set out to demonstrate that value and worth through their achievements and accomplishments. But what happens is, because value is now being conflated with outcome and performance, it always has, like, a slightly hollow quality to it.
Right. It's so external.
Exactly. And so, like, value and worth should be an internal, intrinsic thing. And the minute I start to say, well, I'm only as good as how I perform, It's kind of a fool's errand.
People keep telling me that, but it's pretty tough to understand.
And so the rock bottom crisis for type 3 couple flavors, one is like increasingly like performing and continuing to hit all of those A pluses or best in class markers like Michael Jordan, but an increasing feeling of loneliness and emptiness. It's not satisfying me. And so Michael Jordan, when his father dies, actually goes to baseball, and which was his first love. And so you can see him trying to like return to that which lights me up rather than using outcome or performance to gain a sense of self-worth. And ultimately, it doesn't work for him. He goes back to basketball.
You know, I saw him play baseball. Never saw him play basketball. Saw him strike out at baseball.
You might be one of the few. You saw him strike out. He'd love for you to say that.
Yeah.
So that's one flavor. And we kind of know that as a trope, like Jerry Maguire, that movie is a classic type three rock bottom situation. But the other one then is where a type three in their quest to present as a worthwhile individual actually starts getting a little sneaky and deceptive. And starts
because they're so driven by achievement that they're willing to
So like Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, for example, is a really good example of this, where she begins cutting corners in big ways in order to keep this front going of being best in class. And so there, the rock bottom is a confrontation with the real me is not the image I've been projecting. So this type in particular is motivated by reputational loss and loss of status.
And I would think that loss of reputation from the crisis that a three has created for themselves would then hit them even more.
Right. That's how, like, as I said, like, you can have an affair, you can get divorced, all these sort of things. Like, but for a type three, the facts of that kind of circumstance would be felt as...
Well, I lost my marriage, but at least I still have my Nobel Peace Prize.
That would be a rationalization, right? That would keep them from rock bottom.
Right.
That would be a way of not being honest about, actually, I have flaws just like the rest of us. But, like, the circumstances of, like, say, a public loss of job, they're going to experience as reputational, like, a crisis in their value. Whereas another type, like yourself, for example, or me, one of those sort of classic rock bottom circumstances is going to be felt differently. So what's specific about the type three is I have to confront the gap between who I really am and who I present myself to be. I'm not as slick and as pretty as what I've presented.
Interesting. And so how do they come out of it?
They go to their own authentic self. And make amends, and there's a crisis of authenticity for this type. Am I willing to sort of be naked in my warts and all, and can I still find myself to be a worthwhile person?
Sounds tough for that personality type.
Well, it's interesting. Like, this is like Tom. I mean, again, we're talking about celebrities, and I don't, it's not like I know whether these types are, so I just want a big caveat there. But like Tom Brady might be another example. This other, like, another rock bottom for this type is when,
his first Fox Broadcasting review is bad. He's like, oh, what am I doing?
Exactly. He's confronted with, irrelevance.
Oh no.
Like, my identity is tied up in being best in class. And what happens now when I retire? What happens when now when I age out of the thing that I'm great at? How do I make me, how do I find myself to be a good, valuable, authentic person? So that's an example of a rock bottom for this type that, again, is less flashy, but is about how do I feel good about myself outside my performance?
Interesting. So it can be such an internal journey for that person since previously they're so driven by external factors.
Yeah. And I really want to, like, rock bottoms can be, like, it can look beautiful on the outside, and there can be a quiet crisis for many people on the inside.
You don't say. All right, what's number four?
Okay, type four is called the individualist. And this type is the kind of tortured artist. And this is a very interesting type because what they are attached to experiencing is their own kind of soul. Like my own identity and self is internally deep and worth mining and excavating and expressing. And it's a never ending conversation with myself about who I am.
Mm. Interesting. It's like all internal. It's the opposite of
It's 100% the opposite.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So this type actually becomes attached to suffering. The rock bottom for this type looks very, very different because this type begins to conflate, well, if I go into suffering, if I go into trauma, if I go into the darkness of the human soul, they have this belief that that's where they're going to find their own depth and humanity.
Oh, interesting.
So this is like the type that kind of relishes suffering, melancholy, like likes, kind of like believes that their art comes from depression.
And so maybe they then are seeking that out more and more and kind of wallowing.
Exactly, exactly.
Unable to function quite
exactly.
As well.
So this is a great example where like what would be a rock bottom for someone else for this type is just like grist for the mill. Of like, let me use this to continue to like excavate and mine what it means to be a human being and what it means to be me. And I like having bad things happen to me because I begin to believe that's where my soulfulness lies.
Is there an example in pop culture that comes to mind?
Well, a lot of artists like Prince is this type. Basquiat was this type. Johnny Depp is this type. Mm-hmm. So we do see this type ends up being overly represented in the artistic fields because for them, life is about creative expression. And so what rock bottom looks like for this type is they stay in the depths of pain and suffering for so long, and there's a crisis of meaning making from it.
What do you mean by that?
Where it's like, I thought I was going to get a payoff of feeling unique and special and distinctive, and all I feel is miserable. This gold I was looking for.
Turns out sometimes suffering is just suffering.
Exactly. Exactly. And when they come to that realization, there is often of like, what have I done? Because I've overinvested and spent so much of my life focusing on suffering and the dark side. This type doesn't like to be happy. This type tends not to want to be, as you described, super engaged in the world, like doing kind of banal routine tasks. They tend to shy away from those things. So there's been a real cost to their over-identification with the melodrama and the melancholy of being human. And the rock bottom for them is, what have I given up in order to stay like overly identified with pain? And it's gotten me nothing.
Jeez. That sounds so lonely.
Very lonely. Yeah. Very lonely. But a very untraditional rock bottom than for many of us, because their capacity and sort of inclination towards suffering is disproportionately high.
Right. They seek out the chaos and the trauma.
Right.
And perhaps even drugs.
Right. Exactly. 100%.
Interesting. And so someone to come out of that would be to kind of accept some semblance of a balance in their life, or what is it?
Yeah, I mean, this type is actually what brings them out of rock bottom is getting out of their feelings because they make this their adaptive strategy in order to be connected to their most, you know, deepest self. They believe they find that in challenging emotions. And so the growth opportunity for this type is to realize that the self is actually made through action just as much as it's made through feeling. So this type, it's about like basically stopping the navel gazing, stopping the self-absorption with feeling and like doing acts of service, taking care of an animal, focusing on others in very small routine
ways. Acts of service does really come to mind for me, and that's especially something that's a big like way that people get out of addiction.
Yes.
Right. So that makes a lot of sense.
It's really, the self is not created through rumination. Mm-hmm. The self naturally emerges when I engage with this world.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, number five is next.
Okay. Type five is called the Investigator.
The Investigator.
The Investigator.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Exactly. So this type, we know this type, this is a very cerebral, overly in their head kind of person. This type is really identified with figuring out how things work. Mm-hmm. Like the investigator getting to the bottom of the most elemental foundational structures of how chemistry works, how physics works, how human behavior works.
So often a scientist, but not necessarily.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you might even have, I take a break, hold on.
Yeah, sure.
I've been talking for a while.
I know, you're nonstop just dropping knowledge.
Sorry. Okay.
Okay, so
ask
what's
me the question?
Okay. Okay, so next is number five.
Okay, great.
What's that?
Type five is called the Investigator.
Okay.
And this is the, we know this type very well, cerebral, often intellectual, really marked by overly being in their head.
Multiple PhDs.
That's right, at least. Exactly. And what this type is obsessed with is figuring out how things work in this world, hence the name the Investigator. Like at the most fundamental layer of like exact, you know, how does physics, how does gravity work? Why do humans do the things that they do? This type gets, it's like a drill, gets over, like very specialized and usually in a niche of, I am going to get to the bottom of this and I'm going to figure out exactly how it works and where the frontiers of the limits of our knowledge lie.
I mean, that strikes me as a personality type that would be hard to have a self-inflicted crisis.
Wow. Okay. So this type, in their desire to figure out how things work, begins to become concerned that engaging in the world obscures objectivity.
Oh.
And so this type already has a natural inclination to pull back and isolate themselves. Like the investigator is on the outside looking in.
True.
Right?
True.
And so this type already, like in the healthy levels, likes to be a little bit like bird's eye view. And so what ends up happening, though, is the more this type retreats, often the more untethered to reality they become. And so this type's rock bottom is about realizing that the level of isolation that they have self-created for themselves is actually eroding their feeling of mastery of a field or mastery of how the world works.
Mm. It seems like a lot of these, it's like pressure leading to either a double life or pressure leading to a complete isolation from other people. And all, it's like when their just driving point of view gets completely warped by whatever these forces are.
Yeah.
It kind of leads to a lot of very sort of similar crises.
Yeah. I mean, especially for four and five, which are about pulling away from the world itself.
Yeah.
Because I want to pursue a sense of self or because I want to have this objective, clear-eyed head perspective of the world. And then my reclusion has hidden costs to it that I didn't anticipate and ultimately ends up backfiring.
Right. Like someone might lose a relationship because they're too into their work and not empathetic enough.
Right. I mean, in this
on a
type,
relational level.
I mean, this type, like Georgia O'Keeffe, Emily Dickinson, like these, Tim Burton, like they can be very, very reclusive. Mm-hmm. And you know, those types, I would argue, ended like there was no rock bottom. But for other types, it can lead to, I don't actually feel more secure in my knowledge. I feel less secure. And then I become increasingly paranoid, increasingly reclusive. And it's not going to have this like big public meltdown again, like some of the other more exhibitionist, outwardly facing types do. But there's going to be a quiet crisis on the inside of I'm all alone and I thought I would feel safe in my loneliness, but actually I feel less secure.
And how do they get out of it?
Same as this is type 4 and 5 right next to each other. Same thing where one like big rock bottom opportunity for type 5 would be a problem that I cannot solve with my mind. That actually the only way I can get myself out of it is through actually taking care of my body. Hmm. So a health crisis for this type that really forced them to get out of their head and actually spend a lot of time on the care of the body, that would actually be like a life-turning moment for this type because it would bring them back into engagement in the, with the world and realizing that there are like actually happiness lies not just in a head way of knowing, but it, actually taking care of the body.
It's like the opposite solution that for 4-4.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on to number 6.
Okay, great. So heads up, this is my type.
Okay.
And we can have a discussion maybe about what you what you might be, but there's
stay
some people
tuned
think
to the
that
end.
You might be a type 6. Okay, but anyway.
Some people think that I might be a type 6?
Yeah.
Where'd you read that?
Well, I told you that like as I was like preparing for this, I worked with ChatGPT and they, she, I, whatever, had a lot of the ongoing debate
clankers
about you.
Clankers, six. Okay.
We'll see. We'll see. Okay. So type 6 is known as the loyal skeptic. And what this type is most obsessed with experiencing is this type understands more than any other type that life is fundamentally uncertain. And I have to act in the face of that uncertainty. So what matters to this type is figuring out what who it can trust as a form of guidance to move forward in life. So this type is looking for inside themselves and outside themselves, alliances, belonging, structures, dependable ways of being that allow them to like relax into, I can trust this and therefore I don't feel angst in the face of uncertainty.
Interesting.
And so what happens for this type, though, is in my desire to feel like what can be trusted, I often end up outsourcing my own authority to structures outside myself. So one rock bottom for this type is a crisis of authority where, you know, like maybe I was part of the Catholic Church and then all of these scandals happen. And I've really used the Catholic Church to guide me in feeling safe in this world.
It's like your sense of belonging gets disrupted.
And my sense of like my GPS system. Yeah. Like I thought this was a reliable way of making meaning and knowing what it means to a good be a good person and, you know, take care of others. And now I'm forced to confront that this thing I trusted actually is not trustworthy at all. So that's a rock bottom for this type because this type is externalizing authority rather than internalizing it. And so that's the opportunity for that type in the rock bottom. It is to not use a system outside itself to orient itself, but instead to come inside.
Interesting.
Second type of rock bottom for this type is this type is very duty bound. So the idea is why do I need a GPS system that guides me? Because I really, really don't want to do harm to others and to myself. And so I, whatever structure or way of being in this world that I've oriented around, I'm very dutiful to it. But that creates a lot of pressure inside myself to perform duty. And I begin to feel kind of like the increasing pressure of that. I got to do it this way. I got to do it that way. I've got to be hypervigilant. I can't let anyone down. This person wants this thing. This person wants that thing. How do I reconcile the two? I can't win. Ah! And that pressure then causes this type six to leak bad action. And often for this type, the rock bottom is I was trying so hard to not harm anyone. And at the end of the day, I am my worst enemy. Like the person who cannot be trusted is me. And I have tried so hard in my life to take care of others and to create support structures to take care of myself. And now I've put them at risk. And that Tragic. is a powerful crisis of trust and faith for type six.
Yeah. We'll see at the end.
What, okay. All right. I'll keep it. We'll keep a big reveal.
Let's move on from six to seven.
Okay. Type seven is called the enthusiast. Mm-hmm. The enthusiast is infectiously, contagiously happy, joyful. The value that type seven is oriented around experiencing is the freedom of mind. The idea that nothing can contain me and I don't have to experience pain if I have a mind that can always roam. So this type likes to feel freedom, curiosity, possibility, because in that limitless possibility is where I find there's always tomorrow. There's always a new way of seeing this. And that's what I get kind of addicted to as a type seven.
So the idea of novelty and
exactly.
new experiences.
Exactly. Highly stimulating, big ideas, moving fast, novelty, as you said, wanting to experience all of life. Let's try this. Let's try that. Mm. That's the both the upside and the shadow of this type.
Mm. What's the shadow?
So the shadow is this type is can become increasingly impulsive in their addiction to pleasure. And so you can get destructive behaviors and them going too far into that impulsive behavior. So like RuPaul is an example of someone who's spoken like very publicly about his trials with sobriety. And that's kind of like a classic seven. I just was so impulsive, like with my good time. And then it caught up with me. The other rock bottom for this type is on that search, that obsession with novelty and experience is actually a form of pain avoidance. And so often this type experiences a rock bottom when they have something in their life that happens that they can no longer outrun the pain. So like a death of a family member or something else really serious where it's like my strategy for getting out of this doesn't work anymore. And I'm forced to, I just have to sit in what's extremely uncomfortable. And then the last rock bottom for this type, and like Jim Carrey or Russell Brand would be a good example of this, is that I get kind of trapped in my like fun guy persona, and I'm moving so fast, and I'm always keeping a smile on my face, that it feels, I actually get trapped in the persona of being the happy one. And the wake up call then for this type is I was using that to feel free, but now I feel trapped in like, that's all I know how to do. And so I have to come away from being the funny guy who's always smiling, who's always got a story to tell. And I need to find the other parts of myself that are more subtle, more nuanced, perhaps not as fun and entertaining,
right.
but so are more
like
real.
Finding a sense of peace and a sense of sobriety.
Yeah,
despite
sobriety.
The entertainment.
Yes,
yeah.
Sobriety in its the broadest sense of the word, maybe both in a substance abuse, but also just sober is about being with what
Measured,
is and
right.
and okay with what is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, number eight.
Okay, number eight, the challenger.
Okay,
type eight. The challenger, what they like to feel inside themselves is a feeling of aliveness, like reverberating. Life force just like moving throughout their body.
Ooh.
And so this type often ends up in powerful positions because their desire to flex into aliveness means they come forward as certain, forceful, self-confident, naturally like a leader. And there's like no problem taking up space.
Because they just draw energy from it.
Because it feels good.
Conflict is like, why not?
It feels good. They're like they like my story about them is like E equals MC squared. Like actually, if you get with how much energy is in your body, you're bomb material. And type eight feels, I have so much energy in me and it feels good when I let that come through me. But then this type can become overly domineering and controlling and begins to mistake disproportionate shows of intensity for aliveness. So this type becomes quick to anger. Anger becomes like a cheap proxy for that temporary hit of aliveness. And this type also begins to fear anything that makes them feel vulnerable. And so they have, anytime something could make them feel weak, there's a disproportionate show of force to basically make that thing go away. So Donald Trump, for example, is a type 8. And you can see that in the way he conducts himself politically. Like any attempt to make him smaller, he just responds with even more intensity. So the rock bottom for this type,
yes, please tell me,
are moments when they are confronted with the fact that they are not invincible.
Like when Donald Trump got COVID.
And he did the classic
eight
thing, which is to deny that, like, he'd be like, well, didn't he say, like, he was like, I was amazing. Yeah, stronger than ever. I fought it off in a day, you know, like.
And you're like, brother, you don't look stronger
right.
than ever.
or the facts around the size of his inaugurational crowd, which was smaller than any other president. He just denied that set of facts because that set of facts would have been profoundly confronting to the posture of invincibility and aliveness and bigness that type 8 is attached to experiencing. So rock bottoms for this type are about when their anger or controlling and domineering nature begins to backfire and they get fired. They like Russell Crowe is an example of this, where he had like an explosive, angry outburst. He got arrested. Bad things start happening to them in response to that anger and control. The other rock bottom for this type would be a health crisis, like as you joked with Donald Trump, a real one where that lusty intensity, that disproportionate force, their body will literally not let them do it anymore. And so they're forced to confront their frailty, just like the rest of us.
Number nine.
This is the last one. Mm-hmm. Been very efficient. Type 9 is called the peacemaker. And type 9, what they really like to experience is the feeling of ease and harmony when, like, all is well. Like, when we're all one, we're all singing Kumbaya, like, there's a, you know, there's a feeling of, we can just, like, relax and be calm.
Might they be a host? Like, they're entertaining people?
A lot of sixes tend to be entertained, like Jimmy Fallon, like Conan O'Brien. That's all type six stuff around being funny and snappy and using humor to create connection. Type nine is the person you go to when you're like, I feel stressed out and I just want to feel calm. This feel like it's like when many of us, when we walk through nature, that feeling of like of just peace. I'm part of something bigger than myself. That is what type 9 effortlessly exudes and is attached to experiencing in all walks of life. So what happens for this type, though, is in their quest to create peace and ease, they begin to self-erase. And they begin to deny their own anger. They begin to deny their own wants and desires. They withdraw themselves from the world, although they might have an outward face that looks like they're participating, but it's like they're not fully here. Because if they were fully here, they fear that things could get dysregulated, there could be conflict, there could be disruption. And so better to kind of like 1,000 cuts of just slightly pull back and compromise on who I am for the sake of peace.
It's kind of like the investigator.
Yes.
In a way.
Exactly. Like the behaviors are the same, but the motivation is very different.
Right.
This is about being connected and feeling easeful, whereas the investigator is about trying to figure out how things work. So this type, rock bottom, looks like a couple of things. The first is in their self-erasing, there's a passive aggressiveness to that. Right. There's a denial of when they disagree or when they feel angry about something, and they sort of bottle all that up. And then that anger can leak in explosive ways. And that can create a rock bottom situation for this type, because what has happened is all their strategies for maintaining peace have now backfired, and they've put a relationship or harmony at risk because they didn't risk conflict early enough.
So what's an example of that?
An example of that would be, I mean, I think a lot of relationships end because there's a person that hasn't been straightforward mm-hmm. with how they really feel about something. Mm-hmm. And then it shows up way too late and then you're not able to resolve it.
So they try to keep the peace.
Exactly.
And then that ends up.
Yeah. It's like an appeasement.
To resentment.
Right. Like World War II, like the appeasement ends up actually making conflict worse in the end.
Right.
The other kind of more classic rock bottom for this type, and there are a lot of athletes are actually this type. And so like Michael Phelps's journey would be sort of a classic type nine where he's performing and playing a role because it's what's being asked of him, but he can't feel himself on the inside. Like there's an increasing loss of like, who am I? Like I can't come forward with like, I don't like this or this doesn't feel good to me. I don't want to do this. And so it's a quiet crisis of I'm doing what's asked of me for the sake of the peace, but I'm dying inside. I'm becoming a ghost. And so this type is often about stopping that which is being asked of me and getting back in contact with what I really want.
It seems like to some extent, a lot of the solutions are to kind of do the opposite of what you are like wanting to do as your whole personality, which has got to be like so hard, but also a crisis is going to cause hard things.
Well, and it's all about, as I was sort of describing at the beginning, personality arises from very good intentions. All of these strategies work if they're employed like 20% of the time. Mm-hmm. It's just that we become overly identified with them and misuse and overuse them.
Right. Okay.
And so all of the rock bottoms are about the overuse of a particular strategy to the point where it backfires.
So I've taken this test. I sent you my results.
Yes.
What do you think?
Okay. Well, my first question is, which of the nine types that I described and the crisis, which resonated the most for you?
Well, it's interesting because that, you know, my results were 7 was at the top, mm-hmm. then 2, then 3, then 8, I think.
Yeah, or maybe 6 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you described the 7, it didn't really completely connect with me. The 6, the 2, and the 3 did mm-hmm. a little bit more. But, you know, in other things that I've read, the 7 and the 8 type of types definitely, like, speak to me. So, I don't know where that leaves me.
I mean, I'm obviously like, we could talk for a long time about it, and I don't know how in-depth you want to get. I've been very struck by, like, I listened to your podcast with your ex-wife when you launched Rock Bottom. And for me, there was a lot of language in there that was about acknowledging betrayal of trust, mm-hmm. like a breach of trust, and the pain of that. And to me, that's a very type 6 orientation to something bad happening, which is, this is what it costs me. It costs me like my network, my support system that I depend, that like is the thing I care the most about. Mm-hmm. I was actually trying to like be a loyal, dutiful husband and, you know, worker and all of these things. And then I lost myself, and the thing that I was in service of, I actually put at risk, and I feel deeply sorrowful for that.
Yeah. When you were describing it, I felt that pressure cooker of trying to keep everything together, but then acting out outside of it and then kind of losing the very thing that you're trying so hard to keep.
I've also been struck by one of the beautiful parts of type 6, because this type is obsessed with figuring out what can be trusted. Mm-hmm. This is one of the more authentic types, like who's comfortable showing their flaws. Hmm. And I'm really struck by your honesty and authenticity as you've come out of what you experienced. And that might feel like there's no other, I don't know how else to do this over there for you, but there are many other types that wouldn't be as straightforward about I'm trying to repair.
There was no other way, really. I mean, I lost everything, and I really had to completely just go start from nothing again, just to kind of slowly build back a sense of self. And it's, you know, impossible not to confront it when it's, it seems like the whole world knows how you fucked up.
Well, I mean, actually over here, there are other ways of doing it.
Uh-huh.
And so really one of the beautiful qualities of type six is what we call is the virtue of type six is courage.
Hmm.
And courage is not about like, oh, I'm like charging forward. Courage is about confronting the truth of my heart.
Hmm.
And in types of crisis, the upside of the type six is that courage sometimes spontaneously arises.
Right.
And it's not, as I said, the courage that you see in a movie, but it's the quiet courage of, I'm going to be honest about what's happening inside myself.
Yeah. And I've also found it to be like working on and fostering a deeper connection to like what it is actually that you want in life or that I want. And, you know, being able to express that, whether it's a boundary or whether it's a desire, because I think, you know, something wasn't like I wasn't getting my needs met in some way, or something was out of alignment. And I didn't have the courage to really be able to express it or understand it.
Well, certainly the journey of type six, we call type six the loyal skeptic. And this type, as I said, is often like comedic because it is trying to figure out what can be trusted and what's true. Mm-hmm. And so there is like a hyper vigilant attention to like what's absurd in life, like where we say one thing, but we do another, where we're hypocritical or inconsistent. Like this type is paying attention to all of that, which leads to a lot of humor. And at the same time, as I said, this type really wants to find structures and systems and people that can be trusted. And if if a loyal skeptic finds that, it's like they give their whole being to that marriage, that family, that work, whatever it is.
Hmm.
And then the growth for this type, though, is I become so loyal to this other thing that I forget to be loyal to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I compromise and like not get real and not voice, hey, I don't want to do this, or hey, I have this concern, or hey, this is too much for me, or whatever it is, I begin to suppress all of that because it feels like I can't be with that and be loyal to this bigger thing. But it's still inside me. And so that crisis, that rock bottom that I was describing for the six, is about the suppressed energy that I have thought that if I paid attention to, it would compromise my loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about seeing that I need to do both.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be loyal to self and to other.
Mm-hmm.
And when I override paying attention to the signals inside myself, it ends up costing me in a big way sometimes.
Yeah, that's really interesting, where it's about actually not paying attention to yourself and kind of being consumed by another person, you know, another, whether it's a person or a kind of a role or a group.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And it's not type two, the helper, which you scored highly on,
mm-hmm.
you know, can do the same thing, but that's more about wanting to feel loved, lovable and part of this love bubble.
Mm-hmm.
For six, it's more about like, I committed to being part of this institution, this like the Try Guys or this family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I begin to deny. And it's not even like, it's just like urges and signals and just anything that.
What happens when you don't feel great about those things anymore?
Right, right. And so it's not about doing it for lovability, like type two, the helper. It's doing it for the sake of feeling part of and duty bound to this broader commitment or structure that you're participating in.
Hmm.
And then that's the thing that gets put at risk.
And then since I also scored highly on seven, it's like a drive for novelty and new experiences and kind of
And what I would argue is the symbol of the Enneagram has like the nine numbers going all the way around the kind of like a clock.
Mm-hmm.
And we make these sharp distinctions between all nine types. But the reality is, the analogy I like to use is like the colors of the rainbow. When I am far enough away from the rainbow, I see all eight colors or however many there are. But when I get really close, it's hard to see where orange becomes red, right? There's no bright line distinction. And the same is true for the Enneagram types themselves. No matter what type you are, one of the types adjacent to you, you will also have undertones of. And so, you know, like you could be orange with a lot of red or orange with a lot of yellow. And so in Enneagram speak, we call that your wing. And it's one of the other types that influences you and kind of influences how you show up in the world, but it's not your primary driver.
So you think I'm a 6-7?
I think you're a 6 with a 7 wing.
My son's going to be thrilled.
Oh yeah, 6-7. That's hilarious. How old is he?
Too much. He's 7. okay, we have to wrap up, but what is the prescription for me? What is the, you know, we went through each of them. How do you kind of move past it, move through it?
Yeah, I mean, my guess is that you give yourself a really hard time. And so I would really want to help you love the parts of yourself that got you where you got you where you are. And so I feel like you have a lot of humility and a lot of, I want to repair, I want to build trust, but I want that to be balanced with, I understand, I'm not excusing it, but I understand how I got where I got. And I accept that about myself. So that you can move forward with lightness about it.
Right, right.
That would be my...
I think, you know, there are ways in which I'm getting there, but I don't know. I don't know about lightness about it, but, you know, accepting like, hey, this is what was happening. This is how I dealt with it. These are the reasons why I dealt with it in that way. And yeah, it caused a lot of damage and obviously wasn't the right way to deal with it. But this is what I've learned about myself and what I can take forward in this and other relationships. You know, I think there is a sense of lightness when you can process it in that way.
And maybe lightness is not the right word, but...
Acceptance.
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 Acceptance. Yeah. And really the journey of the six is about, like, as I said, that self-loyalty. And where did I betray myself?
Right.
Way early on.
Yeah, yeah.
That led to a bigger betrayal.
I think, you know, if you follow a kind of a life script that is told to you that you're supposed to do, then that can be a lot of self-betrayal when you wake up one day and realize maybe it's not what you want.
Yeah.
But life's a journey. And that's what this show is about, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Rock Bottom Podcast. No, thanks for being here. I usually ask at the end, what's something you would tell your younger self? And I guess we can talk about that, but it's really, we talk so much about the types. So I guess what's something that you would like people to, who are listening, thinking about what their own type is, what they're going through in their own challenges, what's kind of something that you should, that maybe the audience should ask themselves, kind of taking away from this?
What would I do if I weren't afraid?
Whoa. Dang. Wow. Ugh, giving me chills. Okay. Where can people find your work, Courtney?
So I have a website, CourtneySmithConsulting.com. You can find me there. I have a Substack, What We're Really Up To. And on either place, you can find workshops and other courses that I'll be teaching throughout 2026. I have a book that came out, not about the Enneagram, but is about a lot of the tools that I use when I work with clients. And it's called Choosing Wholeness Over Goodness. And you can find that on Amazon.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was really fun for me.
Me too. I wish we had more time.
Yeah.